Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Laura Carlson, who is the director of the Mexico-based Americas Program at the Center for International Policy. In 1986, she received a Fulbright scholarship to study the impact of the Mexican economic crisis on women and has lived in Mexico City since then. She blogs at americas.org and is currently with a group of international election monitors visiting polling places in today's watershed elections in Mexico. Welcome to Background Briefing, Laura Carlson.
Thanks very much.
And Laura, what are you seeing there? First of all, the reports that we've been getting is that the election turnout is enormous, but the election authorities were very slow in opening a lot of polling places, and there's massive lines and backup. Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. Here in Ecatepec, which is like a gritty kind of industrial suburb on the northern outskirts of Mexico City, we don't have a report from a single polling place that managed to open on time at 8 o'clock. And that's actually against the law. It's an electoral violation not to open on time because it makes it difficult to accommodate the number of people, especially in this election, who want to vote. So we've seen at the polling places that we visited, we've seen long lines of increasingly disgruntled people. But what we've also seen that's most concerning is a series of irregularities that are not, unfortunately, uncommon in Mexico. They include what are called casas amigas, which is a house. Excuse me, there's some street noise. We're here now. Which is a house near the polling place where people pass by to collect the money that they were promised for selling their vote. And these houses are operating openly near a number of polling places. There's especially reports about the problems here in Ecatepec.
So these Casa Amigas, this would be largely the pre-party, right? They're the ones that have perfected the art of buying votes.
William, that's certainly true in this area. From what people have told us, and of course all these irregularities have been documented and reported by the international and national observers. But from what people have told us, yes, they're responsible and they're focusing on the legislative races because, as you probably know, López Obrador went into this election. He's the left candidate with a 20 to 30 point lead in the polls. So there may be some sense that the PRI has decided that the president's race is now out of their hands and is desperately trying to hold on to the legislature.
So given the brazen nature of this, when you go to vote and you collect your money from the PRI party, who presumably you voted their way, how can they be sure that you voted according to, you took their money, but did you do their bidding?
Yeah, well, one of the ways that we've heard about recently, and we don't know because, of course, we can't go, we wouldn't go into the polling booth with a voter, is that they're required to take a selfie, voting and then depositing their vote. We also know, and this I've heard several observers say that they saw firsthand, that the PRI representatives that they're allowed to have in the polling places as the vote takes place were working with two different lists. One was a list of the voter registration roster, which everyone had, and the other was a list apparently of their own that they were crossing off. And so that list, if it was presumably, and the past would be an indication that this is what it is, presumably would be a list of people's names who'd already presented their voter credential and promised to sell their vote. And in that way, they can at least make sure that the person voted. Then they have some other methods as well, but essentially, they're getting more and more sophisticated in terms of how to control this process. And the sad part of it, too, is that we're talking about places where poverty is so extreme and the lack of a citizen culture after 71 years of one-party rule is a problem as well, so that people Cuba will sell their vote for some money to improve their family's economic condition.
And again, I'm speaking with Laura Carlson, who's the director of the Mexico-based America's Program at the Center for International Policy. In 1986, she received a Fulbright scholarship to study the impact of the Mexican economic crisis on women and has lived in Mexico City since then. And she blogs at americas.org and is currently with a group of international election monitors visiting polling places in today's watershed elections in Mexico. And of course, over that 70-plus year span of the rule of the oxymoronic institutional revolutionary party, the PRI, one of the ways that they got the rural vote, because you know the big PRI landowners, the oligarchs in Mexico, get all the best land, they just grab it all, and then the ejidos, the poor people, have to scrape out a living in marginal land, and they desperately need fertilizer to grow their crops, and the PRI would give them fertilizer at the, you know, if they voted for them. So there's a myriad of tricks like Jim Crow tricks that were developed over the years, but it looks like, as you point out, the lead of AMLO, López Obrador, in the presidential poll is such that they can't even rig that. And I take it that's in part because the populace is just so disgusted with corruption and so furious with the lack of personal security because of the rampant violence.
That's exactly right. We've gotten to a point here in Mexico where the status quo is indefensible. So both parties that have ruled over the last couple of decades, the PRI and the Conservative National Action Party, or PAN, are paying the political price of having gotten to the country to this point, to a point where there have been 200,000 assassinations since the war on drugs was launched at the end in December of 2006. There are some 36,000 disappeared people, and that's only by the official registration. And people feel very insecure in many parts of the country, as well as the fact that real wages have actually gone down. And under a very strict neoliberal economic model, Mexico has been one of the Latin American countries with the lowest rates of growth, just over 2%. And if you look at it per capita, just around 1%. So under that model that was promising to lift Mexico into the first world, growth has pretty much flatlined and worker salaries have gone down. So people just got to the point where they could no longer scare them by saying, no, don't vote for the left because we don't know what will happen and we could lose some of our gains. They're just not seeing the gains. And they're much less afraid of a new factor in politics than they are of the current situation.
But the PRI party murdered its own presidential candidate, Colosio, in Tijuana. We're still not sure why, but there were some rumors that he may be, have been too sort of progressive for them. But whatever their reasoning is there a chance that they could murder AMLO? Or what could they do to frustrate his what appears to be inevitable rule, because the presidency is quite powerful in Mexico?
That's true. And as I said, they're desperate to hold on to it and to hold on that power, because with it also comes tremendous economic benefits. All the money that the politicians skim off public resources. This has been one of Andrés Manuel López Obrador's major talking points to end the corruption that's been such a drain on the economy, and the vast levels of inequality. So there's a couple of scenarios that we're not discarding. And in fact, even though that margin makes it more difficult to talk about fraud or overturning or stealing an election, and even some of the international financial communities and other conservative sectors have gotten used to the idea of him being president, there's still these scenarios and there's still a risk out there. And we're seeing with the levels of fraud, in fact, it's making us a little bit more worried as the day goes on. The first one would be assassination, which seems to be, fortunately, at least not likely. It's always impossible to judge that particular one because it just happens or it doesn't happen pretty much. I mean, it's not something we can exactly quantify in terms of the probability. But then there's another strange scenario, because under the electoral law, if there's utter chaos on election day, if they have to annul or not open some 20% of the polling places, and there's a number of other criteria, then the elections are annulled, and this is the troublesome part of it, the candidates who ran in the annulled elections are forbidden from running again. So they could completely kick Lopez Obrador out of the race if they did that. But so far, we're not seeing that level of chaos, at least. The reports are just coming in. But it looks like, you know, that's not too likely of a scenario either.
Well, I brought up the violence and assassination angle because of so many unprecedented amount of violence in this election so far in Mexico. I think 40-something have died. There have been 121 assassination attempts on candidates. That in itself raises some alarms. And it's not as if it would just be some pre-dinosaur who wants to kill Lopez Obrador or his people that get elected on the PID ticket, but there's also the narcos, the drug lords. I think they're behind a lot of these assassinations. So it's not as if the guy's safe. He could get it from both sides, from the criminal gangs who have subverted Mexico and from their criminal relationship with the PRI.
Yes, and we have to remember that oftentimes those aren't even two different sides. Because of the levels of collusion between the governments, local, state, and federal, and the powerful and very brutal drug cartels. So, yes, it is a possibility, but there's another factor to be taken into account, and that is that Lopez Obrador, because of the way he campaigns and because of what he's putting forth, more equality, more social programs for the poor, has a tremendous amount of support. And his supporters are mostly among the poor, and their loyalty is deep, and their anger, if something like that were to happen, would probably be uncontrollable. And so you'd be taking a very serious risk. It'd obviously be extremely drastic and terrible step for Mexico, but it's also not probably a scenario that most even businessmen like.
Right. Well, Laura, we've run out of time, but I thank you very much for joining us on this very important day in Mexico.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here and to be able to talk to people about what's going on down here, which will define the future not only of Mexico, but of U.S.-Mexico relations and relations within the hemisphere for many years to come.
And again, I've been speaking with Laura Carlson, who's the director of the Mexico-based Americas Program at the Center for International Policy. She blogs at americas.org and is currently with a group of international election monitors visiting polling places in today's watershed elections in Mexico. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.